Arizona's news station. KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
You know, it's only January, but final grades are being handed out. These are the final grades, though, for the 2017-2018 school year for the schools in Arizona. We're talking public schools. We're talking charter schools. This is the letter grades, and it helps provide parents and the state and districts with the information to determine how we're doing, right? We need to be able to measure growth. We need to be able to measure progress. And these school report cards, the website of which, if you want to check out how your child's school did, we tweeted out the link for you. Just go to at Bruce and Pamela. We got the link up there for you. You can plug in your kid's school and pull up all the information. I just did it for my daughter's school here during the break. They did really good. I'm happy about that. But this is fulfilling the federal requirement that every student succeeds act. It's accountability to see how our kids are doing. And we find out that charter schools are quite proud of themselves right now. And I think that there's a reason for them to be. But we also got to be comparing apples to apples here. Charter schools say that they're doing so much better than the public education system. In fact, with a release that they just gave out, the Arizona Charter Schools Association says nearly 40% of their schools received an A rating. And almost 70% got an A or a B. Now compare that, Steve, to, they say, 25% of district public schools receiving an A and just over half getting an A or a B.
Yeah, these are all based on the AC Merit testing, which takes place every year. It takes place in a number of different grade levels, and it measures how proficient the kids are in certain subjects, obviously reading and math being the main two subjects. And charter schools are saying they're doing better on some of those standardized tests. The issue really becomes, well, are we really measuring apples to apples? Or, as Pam noted, some people say, look, charter schools do things a little bit differently, and we hear countless anecdotal stories about parents who say, well, I sent my kid to a charter school, it had a great reputation, and then, you know, halfway through the year I get called in because they say, well, your kid's not doing so well, maybe you ought to try a different school. And so then the kid winds up at a different school because they can't hack the curriculum there or because it's an accelerated program. Basis schools have certainly been criticized for this, and basis schools turn out some amazing kids and amazing test scores, and a lot of these kids are winding up in Ivy League schools or you know, some of the top tech schools in the country. But there's also a lot of kids who say, or parents who say, I tried to send my kid to basis, he couldn't do it, couldn't handle the program. So when you say charter schools are doing better, sure, they're doing better. But if you're weeding out the bad kids in order to up your test scores, is that really a fair comparison? Public district schools have to take all the kids. Some of these charter schools don't necessarily have huge special ed programs, for instance. Some of them say, well, you've got to apply by writing an essay. Some of them say, well, you can apply, but we've got a lot of people wanting to apply, so there's going to be a lottery, so we'll see if you get picked in the lottery. And they've been accused over and over again of not following the rules and discriminating and sort of stacking their student body so that they only get the best kids. And the problem kids, the ones that aren't going to do so well on this testing, the ones that are going to drag the test scores down, they somehow always wind up at these district schools. That's the argument you hear from teachers over and over and over again. And it certainly is one of those things that causes a lot of debate, especially when we're talking about school choice and some of the other issues with charter schools.
You know, and when you're trying to compare a charter school to a public school, you need to have that information in mind. And when you're looking at just an overall broad kind of statement that's being made, at least being made here from the association that oversees charter schools, you got to play the numbers game as well, because not only do charter schools follow different rules as far as funding is concerned, as far as what they need to offer students, as far as what kind of students are at their facilities, but you also have to take a look at the fact that there are about 2,000 public schools in Arizona, and let's call it 560 charter schools. So it's a numbers game as well. You're not comparing an even amount to an even amount, and those numbers can be skewed a bit. But at the end of the day, this kind of information is good. It's good to inform parents. It's good that you can go and find out how your child's school is doing. If your child's school is doing really well, chances are you know. Yeah. Because they put the banner out front, they send out the blast emails, it's up on their Facebook page, they make sure you know that they got a good grade. It's when you're like, if you're listening to us right now and you're going, well, I don't know. I don't know how my child's school did last year or the year before. I'm not exactly sure. I did when maybe I enrolled them, but things seem to be good. I'm not exactly sure how they're doing. Well, then again, head on over at Bruce and Pamela on Twitter. We've got the link up for you where you can just plug in your school, and it's going to give you a lot of information. It's going to give you some information just beyond the school's letter grade, because we've also heard, Steve, how there are so many educators in the public school system that don't have the certification. They have an emergency certification. They didn't go through the schooling as, say, a typical teacher that went and got their teaching certificate and have gone through the regulations in Arizona. This is, we need a warm body in front of the classroom. Well, what this website that we've tweeted out for you is also going to tell you is what percentage of teachers or educators at your child's school has that emergency certificate.
There's a ton of data that the Department of Education has put out. Here's an interesting exercise, because I was doing this last night as I was looking over this website a little bit. Look at your kid's school. Look at how they're doing. Look at what their test scores are. You can look at the demographics of the school and the teaching certifications. And then click on the map. Sort of expand the map a little bit. Or if you're familiar with the area, you probably know what the other schools are. Compare it with the charter school in your area. And what I find when I do this is that the test scores tend to follow income. Lower income areas tend to have lower test scores. Higher income areas tend to have higher test scores. And charter schools that are in lower income areas also have lower test scores. And so when you look at these numbers, I think it's important to understand that it doesn't necessarily mean that one is better than the other. One may be better for your kid than the other.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
For one thing. And charter schools have lower test scores in areas where there are other issues and things that families and kids are dealing with in those areas as well. It's not a miracle solution necessarily to say that a charter school is going to come into a low-income area and suddenly raise the test scores to the same as they are in, say, the Scottsdale district. It doesn't always work that way. And so people need to understand it and sort of compare the schools that are serving the same student population, you know, the schools in the same area head-to-head, and really decide what's best for your kid. The great thing about Arizona is you have choice in a number of forms. We have open enrollment in our schools, so you can send your kid to any public school if you're not happy with the one that you want to go to. You have the option of charter schools. You have the option of vouchers. And a lot of people don't have a problem with school choice, but some of the other publicity that in news stories that we've seen about charter schools does raise questions about whether they're really spending the money they're getting as efficiently as they could. And there's some efforts in the legislature this year to make sure that at least we know where that money is going, because ultimately it's our money.
And when you talk about the money aspect of it, that is a big part of it, because charter schools are funded differently than public education. Districts can go out to their community and ask for a bond or an override to get more money. Charters can't do that, and that's one of the reasons why they're funded differently. But just last week, the Grand Canyon Institute, it's a think tank here in our state, they had a report, and in it said about 100 charter schools, they're failing financially. And 33 of them are in dire straits and could close in the near future. Again, if you're a parent, I think that that's important information that you should know, but chances are you don't. Point in case, like last year, there was a charter school that parents were showing up to drop their kids off that day, and it was closed. Yeah. It was closed because
they notified the parents in an email the night before, and the parents who didn't get the email literally showed up to find a locked building. And in the middle of the year, they had to do that. That's not the first time that a charter school has closed in Arizona and closed in the middle of the year. And so when people talk about the finances of charter schools, I think they say, look, there should be more accountability. We should know what's going on in some of these schools so that we don't really stick it to parents who are sending their kids there and just trying to get their kids a good education.
You know, there are some fantastic charter schools in Arizona. There are some fantastic public education schools in Arizona. We have open enrollment, which I think as a parent, for me, when I was looking as to where I should put Riley, it was a blessing and a curse. It was a blessing because I had the opportunity to find the best school for her. That's awesome as a parent. And you might even have some friends that have a child that go, one child goes to this school and one child goes to that school, because kids are different, and they were trying to give their kids the best chance, and schools were better options for one child versus another. But it's also overwhelming. It's also overwhelming when you try to, as a parent, figure out what are the best schools, what would be the best fit for my kid. And I didn't think that I would have to be going through that in kindergarten for my daughter. Luckily, I had some help and some great people around me to do that. So open enrollment, you can take your kid and put them wherever you think is a good fit for them if they've got room for them. It's a great thing here in Arizona. And I like the fact that we've got these grades as well. You can check them out for yourself at Bruce and Pamela on Twitter. You can go plug the school in, even the ones around you, and see how they're doing. Not trying to beat up on charter schools entirely. There's some great ones out there, but it's also a system that I think needs some oversight and a lot more transparency. Well, when we're talking about oversight, I mean, there are so many eyes on the border right now. Our government has been shut down for, 28 days now, because the president wants funding for a border wall. They're not budging in D.C., but there has been some movement on the border, and it's not the movement that maybe you wanted.
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Day 28. Yes, government shutdown. Shut down because of the wall. Build the wall. The president wants $5.7 billion to build a wall. Barrier, is it concrete? Is it steel? Yeah, of course, it's all part of the negotiations, of which they're not getting anywhere in D.C. But what we find out is Monday in Yuma, there was, my goodness, close to 400 people who were brought across the border. And not just brought across the border, Steve. We find out that smugglers have dug underneath that wall.
Smugglers have burrowed beneath that wall. They've climbed over it. They've cut through it, even pulled it down in parts. And what Border Patrol says it needs most is a holistic barrier system that includes sensors on the ground and better camera systems to detect asylum seekers.
So we actually have a barrier here, a wall here. And what do? They dug underneath it. They climbed over it. They cut through it.
Just like they always have. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's been the story at the border. There was a great photo op a few years back when John McCain was going down to the border, and he was getting a tour down there with somebody else in Nogales. And right behind them, a guy climbs right up over the wall and shimmies down the other side and just casually walks across the street as if it's
nothing
no big deal.
Here.
Right in front of, we're talking about border security and all that, and the guy's just like, what? I do this every day. And it happens all of the time on the border. You can say that barriers work, and there's no question that barriers are an impedance, and they certainly slow people down, and in the right kind of barrier in the right kind of place with the right kind of manpower can certainly help. At the same time, when we talk about this border wall, let's be clear about what we're debating over in Washington here. This is $5 billion plus for 200 miles of border wall. And if we're going to build the entire border wall, we've got to go about 1,300 miles just to add to the 700 that we already have and actually wall off the entire Mexican border. That's going to take decades, folks. It's going to take a very long time, not just building it. We're talking about acquiring the land, in some cases suing people, exercising eminent domain, and then you've got to do site surveys, environmental studies, and deal with the different types of conditions and soils. And I mean, when you start to get into the logistics of building this wall, anybody that thinks that this is going to be, if President Trump gets his way tomorrow and Democrats cave in and they get $5 billion, that we're going to put up a wall and it's going to be there by next year, you're dreaming. It's just not going to happen.
You're right. It's not just going to happen like that. And folks cross the border all the time. It does happen all the time. But what happened in Yuma on Monday, we find out that the sector chief there, Border Patrol agent Anthony Porvarnik, he says to see that amount of people, well, that's rare to have it that large.
It's pretty rare to see a group this size. And then the makeup, the demographics of this group. So 87% family units and unaccompanied alien children.
Okay, so we're talking roughly, you know, 400 individuals. And what we're also learning is that after they burrowed underneath, cut through, or climbed over, they presented themselves to seek asylum. All right? They didn't just run across and they're in Yuma now. Woohoo! No, they're trying to seek asylum. And as 87% of them, as you heard there, are parts of families. Well, we also know that if you are part of a family, that you stay together and you have to be released after 20 days. So they're also trying to determine, are they really families? And there's so many questions of what's happening along the border, because are these true families? Are they just saying they are so they can be released in 20 days? And they are, in my opinion, some abusing the asylum system. But like on the flip side of that, we know that when it comes to illegal immigration, it's not those that are crossing the border that are the ones that are creating the most amounts of numbers, the most amount of people that are here illegally. It's those who landed at Sky Harbor through overstaying their visas. So while all this attention is on the border, you got to also up what's happening in the State Department to give them the tools necessary to prevent people from overstaying their visas. It's a big problem. It's comprehensive border security. We're not talking about it. We're just talking about shutting down the government right now. It's frustrating, especially here in Arizona, because it impacts us personally. Hey, we're out here at Barrett Jackson. You've got Steve Irvin, myself. He's from ABC 15. And coming up next here, AirPods. Have you been using them? Do you run around with them? Do your kids get them? Do you buy them for Christmas? Did you know that they can eavesdrop on your conversation so easily nowadays with this technology and the loss of privacy? We're talking about it next on KTAR News.
Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Yeah, you got Pamela Hughes, Steve Irvin from ABC 15 live out here at Barrett Jackson. Westworld, enjoying the beautiful weather, taking in the sights, the sounds, the smells of all these muscle cars and beautiful vehicles that are out here. I mean, they're just breathtaking.
Nothing like the smell of barbecue and the sound of an engine. Yeah.
Yeah, boy. Yeah. It's a bunch of guys out here right now. Yeah, they're enjoying
there's
themselves.
There's a lot of dudes in ankle socks standing around with their hands in their pockets, just kind of nodding and going,
I love the ankle socks, yes. Yep. Not too many people, though, walking around with, like, earbuds in. Usually, you know, even if you go to the grocery store or stuff, you usually see somebody with earbuds in, you know, walking around, Phoenix, whatever it may be. Not too much of that going on out here.
May not be much of an earbuds crowd there, although I'm looking at a guy right now who might moonlight as an Elvis impersonator.
There is that. I see him. Yeah, I do see that.
He's doing well.
But, you know, AirPods, which are like the wireless earbuds from Apple, huge gift. It was a popular gift, especially over Christmas. And you may not know that if you bought these for your kids or you even have them yourself, they have this capability. Apple has a function that turns your iPhone into a microphone for those AirPods.
The Live Listen feature was actually added back in 2014, which allowed an iPhone or iPad to serve as a remote microphone for an MFI-compatible hearing aid. In iOS 12, Apple added Live Listen support for AirPods, essentially turning your iOS device into a directional microphone of sorts and having the audio relayed back to your AirPods.
Okay, in essence, what he's saying there is you can put your AirPods in, leave your phone in a room, and do that Live Listen, leave the room, and whoever's speaking around your iPhone, it turns into a microphone, and so you can eavesdrop a room away what's happening.
You can spy on people, and isn't it remarkable that this particular story is finding its way into the conversation at the very same time that Apple CEO Tim Cook is pontificating on all of us being able to stand up for our rights to privacy. He says consumers shouldn't have to tolerate another year of companies irresponsibly amassing huge user profiles, data breaches that seem out of control, and the vanishing ability to control our own digital lives. That statement is right. his company is a part of the problem. Do you
but
agree?
His company is a part of the problem, but they're not the biggest part of the problem. I think what Apple has done, at least with this Listen Live, is they had the best of intentions. The best of intentions to help people who are hard of hearing magnify what was going on in a room. Okay, that was the intention of it. Because we use it in a nefarious way, I don't think that's what Apple intended it for, which is very different than what Facebook is doing by amassing all of this data and mining all of this data to build these profiles on us.
Well,
it's a little different.
Yeah, there have been numerous stories on Facebook that they told the feds that they weren't going to sell the data, and they did. They told people that some of this data was going to be private, and it really wasn't. And so the bottom line is when you're on Facebook, you're volunteering to give this data, and so you almost have to assume at this point that anything that you put on Facebook, anything that you enter in, that's information about you, will be used to sell you something.
Sure.
That's what Facebook is there for, and that's how they make their money. And this idea that I should have my private space on Facebook that's all mine and nobody's ever going to look at it or see it, I think that's just silly. I mean, if you really want it private, don't put it up on the internet. It's not going to work. In terms of, though, the overall purpose of Tim Cook putting this message out there is that he and a number of others are trying to push for reforms in terms of our privacy, sort of drawing a line in the sand, saying, yes, we've had enough with these data breaches. We've had enough with things being able to spy on us. We've had enough with our data being put out there or sold or whatever. But who's going to write the legislation? We have lawmakers who can't even question a Google executive and understand the difference between an Android and an iPhone, or understand the difference between different operating systems or different internet browsers. If they don't understand that, who are they going to depend on to regulate the companies? Because arguably the brightest minds who might be able to write those regulations and might really be able to rein all of this in are the people who work at those companies themselves.
And you've had a lot of people who've worked at those companies in the past that who have come out and said this needs to change.
Right.
You have people who were at the ground level at Facebook who are embarrassed by what they've created and are concerned about what they've created, and they've gone on to make these foundations where they are trying to put the toothpaste back in the tube, and even though they can't do that, they at least want to be part of the solution. And I think Tim Cook with Apple is part of it, and I see Tim Cook, Apple, different than Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook. Apple is trying to sell you a product, a device, phone, laptop, whatever, AirPods, whatever it may be. Whereas Facebook or Amazon or Google, they're engines that are trying to sell you advertising. They're trying to sell you something. Mm-hmm. And when they're trying to sell you something, they're getting all the information that you are putting in to find out what else they can sell you. So they're using that personal information. They're building that profile on you. So I see it in a different light. And I like Tim Cook throwing his hat into this ring. You're going to need the tech titans of Silicon Valley to get involved in this if any of it's going to change. But to your point, Steve, that who's going to write the legislation? It's a great question. It's embarrassing to watch our lawmakers, our senators, our congressmen try to question Google, try to question Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, how do you make money on Facebook? We sell ads, Senator. I mean, there were so many embarrassing moments in that where I understand the concern that you have. But I'm big on privacy. I recognize that, you know, there are things you put out there that you intend to put out there that you probably shouldn't, and things that you put out there that you have no idea are going to be used against you in the future because you don't know what you don't know. And so Tim Cook kind of laying out these four different things that he says we should have ownership and right over our information, I think that's a good starting point.
You made an interesting point, I think, when we were speaking about this earlier, that technology can be weaponized.
Yeah.
And so this some of the stuff that the best intentions often winds up with the worst results. And the issue here is that no matter how secure you think your system is, or no matter how secure you think your database is, at the end of the day, somebody's going to figure out a way to get in there and get a look at private information. It's not like some of the largest companies who have hundreds of millions of customers in their database are idiots, or that they hire idiots who don't understand how to build a secure system, is that there's just a lot of very smart people with a lot of money to make who can be out there and get into those systems and hack around them and ultimately get to that data despite the brightest minds trying to protect it.
Exactly. And so these are conversations that need to be had, where they go, who spearheads them, who writes the legislation. Does it even go anywhere? Because you've got all these lobbying arms and people who have they're financially invested in having our personal information. I think we're at a bit of a tipping point right now. And Tim Cook kind of spearheading that conversation, I ain't mad at. Hey, if you subscribe to the Bruce St. James Pamela Hughes Show podcast, well, you can do so right now on, get this, your iPhone or your Android. Yeah, never have to miss the show. It is brought to you this week by Stampede Plumbing. Coming up next, I'm going to try to restore your faith in humanity. We'll do that here on KTAR.
KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
All week we've been following the developments coming out of Hacienda Healthcare. This is the long-term care facility here in the Valley where a woman who had been in a vegetative state gave birth to a boy, obviously sexually assaulted. And Phoenix police are investigating. There's an internal investigation going on as well. And it'll be interesting to see what comes out of those investigations for obvious reasons. But we learned this morning that there was an allegation of yet another assault at Hacienda.
The claim surfaced yesterday after a woman told investigators she was yelled at by two female staffers and hit in the head and arm. Hacienda says the woman suffers from a serious intellectual disability and has a history of what they call is attention-seeking behavior. The workers accused deny the allegations. The two women have been placed on administrative leave while they investigate. Meanwhile, Phoenix police continue to look into the sexual assault case involving a woman in a vegetative state who gave birth at the facility last month.
So this allegation came to light, Steve, because of investigators and surveys and questions that are being asked in light of the woman who was sexually assaulted.
Yeah, and obviously not as serious as an accusation as the one that's being made here. And we're still trying to find out how much substantiation police may have for that particular accusation. These two workers have been put on leave, but as I understand it, they haven't found any other physical evidence that would corroborate the story. Not to say that anybody's lying here, but obviously...
But they're investigating as they should.
You've got to investigate, and obviously they're taking it seriously. And that's at least the good news, is that if and when somebody does make an accusation here, certainly there are a lot of eyes on Hacienda right now, and it's going to be investigated. They've just taken DNA, and they've also been doing STD testing.
Yes.
They've been looking for other evidence that other people may have been victimized, and I think that's part of this process here with these auditors in that facility right now.
You know, and I'm... I don't know. I think that just some of the conversations that have taken place and the investigations that are happening, which we don't know the details of quite yet, if there is something going on, if there is a systematic issue, or a systemic issue rather, at Hacienda Healthcare, we're going to find out. I don't think that the second allegation is indicative of there being this huge, big problem there. It's suspect. We still need to learn more about it. Are there more? We kind of got to wait and find out. I mean, the big issue, obviously, is the woman who was raped, attacked. That monster is still out there. It's putting the families who have loved ones in the facility on edge. They don't know if it was somebody who worked there. They don't know if it was somebody who was visiting a patient there. They don't know if, due to potentially lack security, if somebody had gotten in. They don't know if others were attacked. There's so many things that we don't know yet. And to gather more information, to have more of those facts, is what's going to determine the future of Hacienda Healthcare.
I think, honestly, if and when they can identify and arrest a suspect, that's going to tell us an awful lot about what the problems are, what problems they need to focus on there. If this is because you can obviously look, is this somebody who came in from the outside? If that's the case, then obviously you've got to look at security. Are there other systemic problems that allowed this to happen? You're going to learn a lot once you understand exactly how this sex assault happened to begin with. You know, it's not necessarily an indication that everybody's that there's a big problem in Hacienda, but obviously there's a lot of eyes on it right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of smoke, but is there fire? We're not sure. That time will tell that one. And you know what? My goodness, we've had to talk about that story all week. And I mean, for good reason, but it may mean you need your faith in humanity restored. So I'm going to try to do that. And you know what? Nobody ever wants to hear they have cancer, let alone be 6 years old when you find that out. I mean, the family, the child, you know, that's exactly what happened, though, to Matthew. Matthew had a grape-sized tumor on his brain and had to have it removed, and it's created some challenges for the young man. But you know what? The community that he has grown up in has really surrounded him and has tried to, you know, give him some opportunity, give him some experiences. And so the police department in Chaplin, Illinois, stepped up and they said, you know what, we want you to have a good day. We want to help celebrate your birthday. They invited him down to play with the canine dogs, to put him in a Jeep, drive him around, let him play with the sirens. I mean, which kid does not like to play with the sirens? And they wanted to just kind of have him feel like a kid that can go out and have fun and play, and something that Matthew doesn't have the opportunity to do all that often. They wanted it to be all about him and just forget about the situation that he's been in for about a good 2 hours. He loved the dog. He loved the Jeep ride. He loved the police officers. He made some great friends. He even got a hat on that said police. And the smiles. The smiles themselves, Steve, tell you that this department restored this family's faith in humanity. The community rallying around this child has restored my faith in humanity because, I mean, it's hard enough for an adult to have to deal with that, let alone a child. And for everybody to come together and try to make his 10th birthday something special, well, that in and of itself is
and
special.
You know, and you talk to any police department and any fire department in the Valley or anywhere else in the country, and if you ask them to do something like
yes.
this, they'll step right up
yes.
every single time because it allows that kid just to be a kid.
Well, I appreciate you stepping up and helping me out
this
week. We're out here at Barrett Jackson. It's been beautiful out here. It's been fun mm-hmm. checking out these cars and having people stop by saying hi. And you know what? We hope you have a great weekend. We appreciate that. Tommy, why you bugging? Helping us out there back at the studio. Super producer Steve Easy holding it down, as well as Bob McClay.